Hey there, fellow entrepreneurs. If you're tired of complicated domain management, I've got the solution for you, Hover.com. Hover makes registering and managing domains a breeze. Their clean interface and hassle-free experience will save you time and frustration. No upsells, no hidden fees, just straightforward domain services. Plus, Hover offers top-notch customer support. Make your life easier. Head over to MilwaukeeMafia.com/hover and simplify your domain journey today.
You're listening to Milwaukee Mafia, your podcast dose of Wisconsin Mafia and true crime history.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Milwaukee Mafia podcast. I'm Eric.
I'm Gavin.
And we're back for episode two of 1965.
Yep, right? That's right.
And what are we talking about today, Gavin?
We're going to talk about Appleton, Wisconsin.
Is this for real?
Yeah, for real.
Oh, wow. Okay. This is not what I expected.
Yeah.
You don't have the wrong notes in front of you, nope. Right? This is the Milwaukee Mafia podcast.
It is, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right. I'm excited. You've been holding out on me that we're going to have an Appleton story coming up around the bend.
Yeah. So for listeners, so they know, at the time that we're recording this, I'm also working on finishing up writing a book. So my writing time is like stretched kind of thin at the moment, which means that like my note copying is not as fast and efficient as it sometimes is.
Okay.
So like the 65, 66, like some of it might get a little jumbled because I have to pull the stories that I have enough information.
Oh, so you might realize that you missed a story. So we might have to jump back and to catch that.
Yeah.
Story
like right now. I have enough for this one and one more 1965. Mm-hmm. There's got to be another one in there. But because the notes aren't completely copied at this moment, I'm kind of just grabbing what I know I can do. There might be a little bit of jumping back and forth. I don't think anyone's going to care.
No.
But just saying, this is not going to be a perfect timeline for a bit. Also, this episode is really short.
This is kind of becoming a theme of these episodes.
It is becoming a theme, and it's not intentional. I didn't intend this to be short. It just happens to be that way this time. But it is an Appleton episode.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. So, all that, and now we'll start.
With what could be the shortest episode of the Milwaukee Mafia podcast ever, based on the notes.
So, well, we'll see. It's short because nothing happens. Absolutely nothing happens. In March 1965, and for the remainder of the year, Nick Gentile was working in Appleton as a siding salesman for the Built Right Construction Company. While there, he was also working on a business enterprise with a man in Oshkosh. He lived at 8 Embry Court in Appleton, which is near the Valley Fair Mall.
Okay.
Which I suppose there isn't even a Valley Fair Mall anymore, but
it is near the Pick and Save on Calumet Street. How's that?
Sure. For those of you who live in Milwaukee, this will mean nothing to you. For those of you who live in Appleton, at the corner of Calumet and Memorial?
Memorial or Appleton, probably.
Right? Yeah.
I don't know what it is there.
If you kept driving down Calumet instead of turning onto Memorial,
okay,
you would be in this area where he was, where
okay.
he lived.
Okay.
It's a little neighborhood that nobody probably ever goes in. Anyway, Nick Gentile and his business partner, Kenneth Weiss, entered the Siesta Club in the town of Menasha at 1 in the morning on April 28th, 1965. The two men ordered a drink and then became loud and were asked to leave by the manager, Richard Schaefer. The men left. But then they returned at 2:15 and badly beat Schaefer until he passed out. A female bartender heard the commotion and saw the men drive off, noting their license plate number. The car was easily traceable because it was registered to Kenneth Weiss's wife. Gentile was charged with battery, and his attorney, Henry Hughes of Oshkosh, entered a plea of not guilty and asked for a jury trial. That is not really the focus of this story. That is just a build-up here For some reason that I'm not entirely clear, the FBI asked Appleton City Inspector Charles Magnet on December 13th, 1965, if they had any contact with Nick Gentile. Not sure how they thought that there was some. He said no, but he indicated that a man named Vincent Maniacci had come in a few days earlier to apply for a liquor license for 512 West College Avenue, a building owned by L.H. Chudikoff Real Estate. Maniacci had returned to Magnet's office and this time had with him Nick Gentile. They proposed the idea of an Italian restaurant and cocktail lounge called the Roman House. At this time, the buildings next to 512 College Avenue were a typewriter shop and a tile shop. So, just a quiet little stretch. Mm-hmm. Maniacci, who did all the talking, said he hoped to have the restaurant up and running as soon as January or February 1966. Magnet called the FBI back and said that although Maniacci was clearly in charge, he was under the impression from Gentile's presence in the office that he would have some sort of financial interest as well. Now here's things that I don't know, but I have suspicions.
Okay.
Following this interaction in December 1965 between the city inspector and the FBI, the Post Crescent starts writing a couple little editorials.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're like, we don't want this guy to open a restaurant in Appleton.
Okay.
And that's weird. That's super weird. Because, first of all, at this point in time, Vincent Maniacci is not really like a known criminal.
Okay.
Later on, he'll have like a burglary ring. He'll be the target of a car bombing. Later on, his name will mean something. Right now, his name doesn't really mean a whole lot. So it's weird that the Post Crescent would care. And second, I don't know, like, if this is something the Post Crescent did, but I'm guessing they didn't hang out at City Hall and be like, hey,
who's opening a restaurant?
Yeah, who's applying to open restaurants in town and, like, run background checks on every one of them? Like, that seems really out of character.
So, but mm-hmm. with that said, the way you describe this is that he's already on the FBI's radar.
Yes.
Right? Because they're already contacting him. So, are you implying that possibly either the city of Appleton or the FBI went to the Post Crescent to try and get them to stop this restaurant from opening?
That is exactly what I'm implying.
Okay.
That is exactly where I'm going with this. I don't know that. I can't back that up. But I can't see a situation
where
the Post Crescent is going to do this without any sort of reason to do it, unless they got like an FBI agent who stopped in and said, hey, do you know this guy is moving into your neighborhood, and kind of freaked him out a little bit. I can't see this happening because it's like, first of all, how would they know? And second of all, again, at this point in time, he's totally a legitimate businessman. Like, there's no reason to be the least bit scared of him opening a restaurant.
Yeah. So I'm curious now, though. Two people are aware of this, right? The FBI,
mm-hmm.
and then the FBI is contacting somebody from the city of Appleton, you said?
Yeah.
So that person's also aware.
It's possible the city inspector spoke to the Post Crescent as well.
Yeah, because that would be the one I would go with, because I guess the FBI is way less concerned. They just want to arrest the guy,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
They don't really care if he opens a restaurant in this little town called Appleton.
Right.
Whereas, obviously, the city of Appleton really cares if somebody the FBI is investigating opens a restaurant in their town.
Yeah.
So
you're right. And it could go that way as well. It could be the city inspector who like, goes to the Post Crescent and is like, hey, by the way, I don't know who this guy is. I don't know what his deal is, but the FBI is asking about him.
Yeah.
So that could be as well. So I don't know what initiates this Post Crescent interest.
But it isn't
spontaneous. It isn't like somebody at the Post Crescent stumbled upon this and thought this was a good idea. Like, somebody had to let them know.
And have you seen these articles that the Post Crescent writes about them?
I tried to get the copies of them for today, and I could not bring them up. But I don't have access to the Post-Crescent right now.
Okay. Because I would just be curious to know, like, are they talking about him as the reason why this restaurant should be open is because he's a bad guy? Or do you know that? Or do you just know that articles were written about him? About the opening of this restaurant, if you follow me.
The only thing that I know right now, and you know, and maybe I saw these articles years ago when I originally took notes. I don't know. At one point in time, I had access to the Post-Crescent. Currently, I do not have access to the Post-Crescent. It's a whole online digital rights thing, whatever. But I do know that a good part of the focus was them not so much attacking Maniaci as the fact that they're saying that he is apparently going into business with this guy who is currently on trial for beating a local bar owner. So it's more to their, that's their angle.
Okay. Well, see, now if you put that angle in there, that's a lot more believable that they could just stumble upon.
Yes, but they still would have to be told that by somebody.
Yeah, that's true.
Because Gentili's name is not on any of the paperwork.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
And because you said it was right over by Calumet Street where they beat the guy up. Right?
And the only connection that is known is that he just happened to be in the office when this permit was being filed or whatever. It's weird that he was in the office when the permit was being filed, but it doesn't necessarily mean anything. Mm-hmm.
I assume the restaurant never becomes a thing?
Do you just want me to tell this story or not?
Okay, go ahead, tell a story. Sorry, do you still got quite a bit more?
Not quite a bit, but
yeah.
Okay, so the Post-Crescent kind of comes out against this guy. The Appleton police chief publicly opposed the granting of a license to Maniaci. Maniaci, in turn, said, hey, you know, I know you think I'm like this terrible, like Milwaukee guy, but I've got Appleton roots. He goes, my mother was actually born in Appleton on Thanksgiving Day. She was baptized at St. Joseph's Church in Appleton, which is true.
Okay.
Which is true. His mother was born in Appleton. Maniaci pointed out that he had no criminal record at this point and had held a Milwaukee bartender's license for 25 years. He's clean. He's experienced. He specifically said that Gentili would have no interest, financial or otherwise, in the restaurant and pleaded that he had already invested thousands of dollars into remodeling the building. I'm clearly on Maniaci's side here. Like, I know now that he's a shady guy, but there's nothing at this time to indicate that. There's nothing that me, as somebody who could approve a license, would point at and say, we can't have this guy.
Right.
You know, I don't know that I should be saying something. I try to avoid current things, but I'm going to just do this. So there are certain places in Appleton, and I don't want to name names, but Jack's Apple Pub that somehow maintained a license for quite a while, despite some shady stuff going on there and some multiple shootings. So go ahead and come at me, Jack's Apple Pub, because I think that one's pretty well known.
Yeah, and you're right. Like, these activities are happening at the place and they're still keeping their license, where they're trying to block somebody just simply, not even for him.
Yeah.
But somebody he's associated with, more or less, right?
Right.
I mean, it's not, and technically he's part owner, I guess, but not really, because it's not on any paperwork.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So
the Appleton Welfare and Ordinance Committee, apparently are the people who oversee this, decided to delay the decision on granting him a license. Police Chief Earl Wolf attended that meeting and presented his written opposition to it. At the meeting, Maniaci was represented by two attorneys. His Milwaukee attorney who had come there was Max Goldsmith. It's fine. His Appleton attorney was Mark Catlin, which I love that Mark Catlin is like a theme. I never intended Mark Catlin to be a theme, but Mark Catlin, for those who haven't listened or this is a long time ago now, he's the guy who got caught up under some very questionable circumstances taking money from people to get their loved ones paroled from prison, which was a big no-no. Like, you're not supposed to do that. So he was basically taking money to do something that you're not supposed to do because it's implied that he's friends with the governor and getting favors. So Mark Catlin already has kind of a tarnished reputation. Somehow still an attorney at this point, but either way. So his attorneys, they said, why is Maniaci being denied just because of guilt by association? As you said, Eric. Mm-hmm. They had heard that 13 aldermen had signed a resolution to oppose the license and demanded to know why. Alderman Glenn Thompson made a motion to hold the license in abeyance until the remodeling and inspections were done. He was seconded by Alderman Richard Heisman. I don't know what's up with that. Like, the holding the license in abeyance thing, like, fine. Okay, we'll hold off on this for now. Fine. But that he specifically says until the remodeling is done.
Like they're trying to, let's get him to remodel the whole building. And then we'll deny his license so we have this nice new building.
Yeah. Like, that's just rude. Like, what the heck? Ultimately, January 18th, 1966, Vincent Maniaci withdrew his license request. He was refunded his $275 license deposit. In my opinion, I think it's fair to say that the Appleton Post Crescent was the number one, possibly only reason that the license had any controversy and was ultimately not granted. So I guess depending on how you feel about that, yay Post Crescent or boo Post Crescent?
Well, I would argue with that because more than likely it's going to have come from the city of Appleton that got the Post Crescent on writing these articles, right?
Yes.
So the city of Appleton was going to do whatever they could do to block this from the get-go, you know?
Yes. But I think, and I hear what you're saying, and you're right. If the city internally is like, we're not going to do this, I mean, They're in charge. They can do that.
Yeah, they have a lot of pull to, even if the community doesn't per se, say no to it.
I think it definitely helps when you can get articles and point to them and say, this is why we don't want to do it. Because then you get, otherwise the people in town aren't going to know. But once the people in town know, they're going to be like, maybe we don't want this guy.
Yeah, and it gave them a great way to have community support that the community said, we don't want this restaurant here either. So
yeah. So, that's the whole story. Like I said, nothing actually happens because the license gets denied. But it's kind of interesting in that nothing happens.
Mm-hmm.
Because, what is going on here? Like, this is so weird. And I get why it happened. I feel like, he didn't do anything. Like, he just withdrew his license and he went back to Milwaukee and he was like, okay, fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like maybe not at this time, but today, you could totally sue the city for this.
Really?
I feel like you could, because they're really not giving him any reason whatsoever.
Yeah, the reason they probably give us just completely ridiculous because you know somebody we don't like.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think that's grounds to not give you a license.
Right.
So.
Now, and I could be very wrong on that. I am not a lawyer. I don't know city ordinance stuff. But I feel like having the police chief make a public written statement against you when you've done absolutely nothing, you can probably sue if for no other reason than that they've tarnished your reputation.
So now you said that at this point in time, the guy that was trying to open the restaurant was basically nobody.
Right.
But then, but in the future, he becomes, you know, involved in tons of crimes down in Milwaukee.
Right? Yeah. So I should clarify this. So Vincent Maniaci, Vince is, again, at this point, he's really nothing. He's worked in the bar industry most of his life. The reason that he's really known at all is because his dad is kind of a mob figure and his brother is a major mob figure. So his family's kind of got that taint on them. But up to this point, like, yeah, he's not really considered a bad guy.
So now I'm curious. Speculation time here. Something Gavin doesn't like very much.
Yeah.
But would you...
That's okay.
Would you think, had this gone through, he opens up his restaurant, this could be two angles. This could be him getting away from the mob life so he never has a part anything to do with it again.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be... Is this a play by the mob to expand up into the Appleton area where it could have blossomed into more than what it ever became? Do you have a feeling on which way it probably went?
I'm actually really glad you asked that question.
Okay.
When I had first stumbled on this, I mean, I've known about this story probably 10 years now. Originally, I had read it as, oh, it's like a mob outpost in Appleton. That's how I read it. I don't feel that way anymore. And I don't feel very strongly about that. I think, not necessarily that he's distancing himself from the mob. I mean, maybe. But I think this is clean. I think this is legit. Although Vince, like I said, later gets into some shady stuff and he is the target of a car bomb, he's never actually becomes a made member of the mob, as far as I'm aware. And, you know, he's kind of just like in that orbit, but not really that close. So I don't know if it's necessarily like trying to escape them, but I think if he would have opened the restaurant in Appleton and would have lived in Appleton and ran the restaurant for the remainder of his life, that might have been the last you ever heard of the guy.
Yeah. So, and I could see, and that's actually the way I would think it would be, is not so much that he's like, I need to go to Appleton to get away from all the shady stuff.
Right.
But it would just naturally happen.
Right.
You know, whereas him not getting this restaurant, moving back down to Milwaukee, now he's surrounded by all that shady stuff and he just ends up getting wrapped into it at some point in time.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't help that this worked out the way it did because Nick Gentile, mob guy. His business partner, Kenneth Weiss, mob guy. So these are all people who are like, got that stink on them, you know, that they've got law enforcement looking at them all the time. So that doesn't help that he was associating with those guys while he was in Appleton.
But those are the people he knew. I mean, it's just what you have to do. Like,
yeah.
You know.
I don't know why Gentile was in the office with him at the time that... I don't know that there was any reason for that. But yeah, basically I think that's what it comes down to is he was opening a restaurant in Appleton. He happened to know that people he knew were working in Appleton at the time. Mm-hmm. I think that's all there is to it. So yeah, it's weird. But like I said, I've come around. Like I used to be like, oh, the mob is this shady organization with putting their tentacles into everything, you know, that.
Yeah.
I used to have that stereotypical view, and I've so come around on that where I'm like, to some degree, that's true. I mean, like, it's not completely made up, but so much of this now, I'm like, this is like the FBI and prosecutors, like, really exaggerating things to make people sound worse than they are.
I would say prior to this podcast, I really kind of had the philosophy that the mafia was really, really tailored like towards the grab any money that they like, just complete greed.
Yeah.
And I think there's a certain extent to that, but I think more so, it just seems to me like they're more of a group that's working together to create income, generally using shady practices to so everybody can live, survive. You know, it's not so much of an evil enterprise, you know, like evil overlords or anything,
yeah. But
more just like a small organization that's doing what they think they need to do to survive. I guess, I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, the when things get violent, then it's harder to justify that. But yes, to a point, I agree with that.
You know, like, I don't think that Frank Ballister ever in his mind had any intention of, we're going to take over the state of Wisconsin. You know?
Sure.
Like, he was just, this was the thing he did to provide, raise money, do whatever he did. And sometimes it got violent. But in the end, all he was trying to do was provide for himself and provide for the people that were around him, basically.
Okay. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
So, and I think that's a very different, that's not the way it's portrayed in the normal media.
Right.
And maybe that's just unique to Milwaukee.
And Milwaukee does have its quirks, for sure.
So.
But yeah, I would say, yeah, if he's an Appleton, I think it's pretty much, he's going to be a bar owner, probably not really distinguished from anybody, not a bar, well, restaurant owner, but I'm sure, you know, has a bar as well. But yeah, because like, there's nobody else around.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe it would do a little gambling, like, you know, but as I've expressed numerous times in here, like, I don't think that's that big of a deal.
No, exactly.
So, like, I can't see him getting involved in a whole lot worse than that.
So, my final question for this would be,
yeah.
Now, is this the only instance you've ever seen of somebody coming up from Milwaukee that has ties within the Milwaukee Mafia to Appleton to start a business or just, you know, or...
Offhand, it's the only thing I can think of. There is another story. There's a Menasha story. But I can't think of another Appleton story at this time.
So, and kind of this along the same lines where it could be construed as, it could just be a guy moving up here and doing something, or it could also be construed as a mafia trying to expand up into this area.
Oh, the Menasha one is definitely shady.
Okay.
The Menasha one, there's no doubt it's shady. Okay. But
can you share where that is in the timeline? Is that coming up or is that quite a ways away yet?
I think it's a little ways away, but yeah, it's a... It's a shady one. It involves some bribery of public officials. It's a shady one.
Okay.
But yeah, I can't think of anything otherwise with Appleton. Most of the time, they did not really have an interest in expanding territory.
Mm-hmm.
It was Milwaukee, Racine, Kenosha, occasionally as far north as maybe Oshkosh, not even really Oshkosh, more like Fond du Lac.
But that's mostly... Because of an cheese company we won't name.
Yeah. Yeah, like rarely would you see something in Oshkosh, like maybe a little gambling or whatever here or there. You don't really see it go up into like Sheboygan. Like they're very not expansive.
Mm-hmm.
And which is kind of odd because it wouldn't be that hard.
Right.
But it doesn't seem like there's a strong interest in doing that.
And it seems like for a lot of the stuff they were involved in, it would be a great opportunity to go to some of these smaller communities because, you know, Milwaukee was kind of equipped to handle these, at least not initially, but you come up here to Appleton, they weren't going to have any idea how to handle organized crime.
Right.
Because they never dealt with it before.
So. Right.
So
yeah, I don't really know why the whole expanding thing never really happened. Even, you know, even legitimate expansion, like, hey, I'm going to open a jukebox route in Port Washington. You could do that, and nobody would probably care. So, yeah, I don't know why that never happened. That's a whole other thing, but man, this is all I really got for Appleton's story. The story that didn't happen.
Because they
snuffed it out before there was even the slightest hint of trouble.
Yeah, good job, Appleton. So
yeah, I guess
maybe it could have been the best Italian restaurant in Appleton still today.
Could have been
if they just would have let it happen.
It could have been better than Victoria's.
Yeah. which to be fair, not much of a step to beat that out. I think.
Are you Victoria's not a sponsor. There goes any chance of Victoria sponsoring us. Thanks,
Eric.
Well,
and half the people in Appleton might stop listening to this podcast because I said that. So, it's like, I knew these people didn't know what they were talking about.
Oh.
All right. So before we get ourselves in any further trouble, should we wrap this episode up?
Yeah. Well, you can talk bad about Victoria's. I talk bad about Jack's Apple Pop. We'll just get everybody mad at us. It's fine. Yeah, we can wrap this up.
So with all the negativity that we just laid out there, don't forget we have a Patreon. So find it at patreon.com/MilwaukeeMafia or MilwaukeeMafia.com. And Gavin, if anybody wants to yell at you, where can they find you to yell at you for?
They sure can. You gave some great options, but if you want to reach me directly, it's MilwaukeeMafia@gmail.com.
And we will be back next week with a Patreon episode and 2 weeks with another Mafia episode. We thank everybody for tuning in.
Thanks for tuning in to the Milwaukee Mafia podcast. Join us next time for another look back at Wisconsin Mafia and true crime history.